I only hope that we never lose sight of one thing, that it was all started by a mouse.
Hello, everyone out there in podcast land. This is the Beyond the Mouse podcast, the podcast for all things Disney for NPR Illinois Community Voices and for the Front Row Network. I'm your host, Craig, and I'm joined today by my co-hosts, Mr. Brett Rutherford.
Hello there.
And Ms. Vanessa Ferguson.
Hello.
I am excited today. And I say that often, and I always am excited, but this is kind of an extra step up or an extra level for me. We are thrilled to bring you an interview today with Billy Campbell, who of course you all know from numerous roles, but he's known best in our heart as The Rocketeer. As The Rocketeer is going into its 30th year, and we're celebrating that anniversary, getting to speak to Billy, and just excited for this conversation, because I have to share right up top that The Rocketeer was one of those first films that truly connected with me as a little kid. It came out in 1991. I was 5 or 6 years old. I'm sure that I didn't see it in theaters, but I got to see it as soon as it came out to video. And it was just a great film, a heroic film. It gave me that sense that I loved superheroes and I loved that kind of comic atmosphere. And that, of course, has carried into my whole life. I mean, we started this podcast talking about Avengers Age of Ultron, and it's because I love these superhero stories. I love these comic book stories, and this started that passion for it. So this means a lot to me to get to talk to Billy today. How about you two? Because I know that you were excited as well. Vanessa, your thoughts on the interview we have coming up with Billy Campbell?
Well, it is always a pleasure to speak with creative people. I especially love when we stop talking about their career and talk about life, because they are so thoughtful and have a wonderful perspective to bring to the table in conversation. So that I am looking forward to, but also I'm very much looking forward to living vicariously through your joy. I am so excited for you. We tease you just terribly sometimes, so
more
it's
than
nice.
Disneyland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. You know, it's nice to see some good things come your way on this podcast. So I am just so excited for you.
Well, thank you. I'm really looking forward to it. I will tell you, people ask armchair Imagineering, what would you put into Disney? And I always said that, you know, the old Hollywood vibe of Disney's Hollywood studio is something that I would want to explore more. So I'm saying, and I'm sorry, Aerosmith fans, get rid of Rock and Roller Coaster and make that the Flight of the Rocketeer, because that is such a, it fits so well right there next to the Hollywood Tower Hotel. It would be amazing to keep that side of the park in that way, but that's a whole nother podcast. Brett, are you excited for this interview?
I'm really excited. It was great watching the film again and doing all of the research and revisit the 80s and the 1980s, yes, and the whole Dynasty era. And I had so many friends that enjoyed Dynasty. So this part's for you when I'm asking you questions about Dynasty. So, but just overall, I just cannot wait to get this started. So
I can't wait either. Let's go right to our interview with Billy Campbell. We are so excited to bring to Beyond the Mouse, NPR Illinois Community Voices podcast, Billy Campbell. How are you today, Billy?
I'm very well, thanks.
Absolutely. That's so great to hear. And of course, we want to speak to you about the 30th anniversary of The Rocketeer. But before we do that, I really want to talk about Cardinal, because this is a show that was on CTV in Canada, but fortunately for us, it's actually available on Hulu. So in researching this interview, I jumped on Hulu and I found that, and I have to tell you, I binged the first 2 seasons, so I'm through that, and it is such a great show, and you play such a multi-layered character. You've got this kind of gruff exterior, but at the same time, you're such a family man at the core of it. And I just wanted to ask you about how you get into the role of John Cardinal and how was that experience to be that role and on that show?
Well, honestly, I think it was one of the best experiences of my career. And in terms of getting into the part, I have a bit of, as I presume most actors do, a bit of a casting director that lives in the back of my head. And if I read a part and I either see myself in it or I don't, you know, as if I'm a casting director. And if I don't see myself in the part, it's very hard for me to, you know, get up the energy to even go on the audition. But within a page, within the first couple of pages of reading the pilot script for Cardinal, I saw myself in the role. I thought to myself, my God, I'm perfect casting for this. It's like I could see myself in the role. And that being said, it was heartbreaking because I had promised my wife, we had a new kid, and I had promised my wife that I would be around for her final year of architecture studies and in Copenhagen. So I turned it down without even mentioning it to her because I didn't want to pressure her. So it was, you know, it was a heartbreak, but I have, if nothing else in my life, I have learned a bit of Zen and I let it go and all was well until about 2.5 weeks later, my manager called back and said, the people from Cardinal are sniffing around again and they want to know if no really means no. And it was like a dagger in my heart. And I brought it up with my wife and, I said, look, I know I said that I would be around for your final year of studies. You say no, and I'll say no again, and I'll never think of it again, and we'll never talk about it again. She said, well, can I read it? I said, okay, yeah. I had to teach her how to read a script. You know, she wasn't sure what the stage direction meant and all that. She read it. She came back. She said, I think you ought to do it. Yeah. So I ended up doing what turned out to be, I think, one of the best roles of my life, of my career. And karmically, it all came back to her because the show is playing and or has played in over 100 other countries and is really, really successful. And it's been the best opportunity I have had to get my foot in the door of the business over there that you could imagine. So the chances of me sticking close to home are even better because she did say yes.
That's wonderful. And you know, it's funny. I have texted so many of my friends this week to say, you need to watch this show. And I have a good friend who is in CSI out in San Bernardino County. And so I said, Kirk, you need to tell me, you know, is this an accurate show? And he said, it really, truly is. And I think it's because of the writing and because of the books that they are based on. Just incredible. You have such a heartbreaking end to season two that I finished last night. And so now, after this interview, I'm going to start season three. So if people in the United States have not heard of this show or haven't had the chance to check it out on Hulu, I cannot recommend this enough. And I don't know, the season four did air in Canada last year, right? And so any idea how long of a delay that takes for it to end up on Hulu or anything?
I don't know, honestly. And I've heard from a few other folks that they're looking for season four who have watched the first three on Hulu. And I can't honestly imagine why it's not there yet. So no clue.
Well, at least we get a little bit of time then to be able to kind of feel satisfied in this character, because again, it's just an incredible, incredible role. And as you said, you are perfect for it, especially even explaining that story with your wife and the fact that family is obviously very important to you. That is the driving sense that you get from this character. Yeah. So I know Vanessa has a question now for you as well.
Sure.
I do. Well, for a lot of people, you're their first superhero. And I have to tease my co-host a little bit, Craig. He feels this way very strongly and he's playing things so cool right now. I have to give it up to Craig, but he is a very big fan. So we want to ask you about your origin story and how did you get involved in acting and what led you down the path to becoming Craig's first superhero?
Well, technically, he's not a superhero. So
true. Technically,
but he has a cool backpack.
Just the guy with a rocket bike. You mean the whole story? I'll try to condense it. I'll put it in a nutshell, but...
Sure, whatever you feel comfortable sharing.
No, I'll share all day long, but... you know, I was a boy in Virginia. I grew up on a farm. I'm leaving out a lot of the unsavory stuff. I went to art school, commercial art school in Chicago. I wanted to be a comic book artist, honestly. And my next move was to go east after Chicago to, I would have gone east to Joe Kubert's School of Comic Book Art in New Jersey. But I fell in love with a gal from acting class in Chicago. I got into an acting class because a buddy, a friend of mine said, come, you got to check this out. It's amazing. He was in an acting class on the Near North Side. And I went in there and I joined the acting studio. I dropped out of art school, much to the chagrin of my parents, and started acting. To get your start in Chicago is a lot, or it was in the day, it was a lot easier than elsewhere, I have to imagine. Partly because Chicago is so condensed that as an aspiring actor, you can walk around every agency in town in a single afternoon, just on your own two feet. And back then, any agency would see anybody. You could walk in as a complete unknown and you'd be guaranteed at least one meeting with an agent from an agency and give them your picture, talk to them, give them your pictures, your headshots, and your CV, such as it was, with nothing on it. And how it generally worked was the first agent to send you on a meeting that got you a job would represent you. And so I did that. And I remember I got, the first thing I ever did was I had an audition for a soap opera. I don't remember which one it was. It was in New York. Agent calls me a day later and so excited, guess what? You're gonna screen test for, I don't know what it was, All My Children, let's say. They're gonna fly you to New York, you're gonna screen test for All My Children. And I was terribly excited, but then I was like, but what does that mean? Does that mean, she's like, yeah, it's a screen test. You sign a contract, then you do the screen test. If they want you, they got you for, you know, 2, 3, 5 years. And I was like, I used to watch soap operas at a not so productive point in my early life. And I really think they're kind of cheesy. I don't want to do it. She was like, what? You've never done anything. You got a screen test. A soap opera. I don't want to be on a soap opera. Yeah. So she yelled at me. And then I said, does that mean you won't be my agent? And she said, no, I'll be your agent. And she hung up the phone. So I became an actor. And then I did a small part. My first on camera was a small part in a TV movie in Chicago. I was so petrified when I got on screen in front of the camera. When I got in front of the camera that I froze up. I became a block of wood and they almost entirely cut me out of the thing. It was traumatic. The director grabbed his hair and turned away from the camera, yelled something obscene, and I almost quit the business if it hadn't been for a very, very kind first AD who took care of me. And then I left to go to LA to chase my girlfriend from the acting studio, choosing instead of going to comic book school to go out to LA. I chased her out there and my first job there was, I got an arc on Dynasty, which was terribly exciting because it was the top, I think it was the top rated show on TV at the time. I had no idea what the part would be. When I auditioned, I was reading a scene with a man and a woman. I mean, I was the man, they had a woman there. And then I went home to Virginia to visit family. And while I was in Virginia, I got a call saying I got the job on Dynasty. I happened to be visiting an old teacher from school at the time, and he was thrilled, I was thrilled, and we spent the evening, you know, just conjecturing which of the beautiful women on Dynasty I would be I would be cavorting with. And then I got out there and realized that that the character was gay. And so that was interesting because I had never, well, because they hadn't said anything about it and because I had never played a gay person before. And I think it was one of the first, if I'm not mistaken, the first openly depicted gay relationships on primetime television. And it was a blessing, a wonderful, wonderful blessing. And then I was sort of off and running.
Yeah, we've been having a lot of discussions recently about the ability to be able to see yourself in the story. And so to think that that was an experience that a lot of people had, partially thanks to the role that you were able to get, I think that that's just absolutely wonderful. I have sort of a sillier question, and Brett is going to ask you about Dynasty, maybe more specifically. But I noticed on IMDb that you have a couple of different screen names, depending on which era of film it was. And I was telling my co-host yesterday, I said, I have seen the beginning of Rocketeer maybe a million times. I had no idea that that first title card is Bill Campbell. I know you as Billy Campbell. So I just, you know, how does that evolution happen? Because I know you also are William Campbell in Gettysburg and a couple of other credits as well. I think Star Trek Next Generation. So just, if you'd like to answer a bit about that.
Yeah, it's easy. When I first came out to California, and registered with the Screen Actors Guild. My family have always called me Ollie or Billy, right? Ollie for my middle name, Oliver, Billy for William. And, when I came out there, I was young and I wanted to seem, I guess, more mature than I was. And so I started going by William. But then the Screen Actors Guild got a hold of me and said, well, you can't be William because there is a William Campbell. And he had been on Star Trek previously and done a bunch of other stuff, Westerns and so forth. He's I looked him up and I'm like, oh, I know that guy. So then I went by Billy. I always wished I had gone by Ollie because that's the name that fits me best and the one I feel most comfortable in. So then I went by Billy and then I went by Bill. And then I changed it as at a certain point, I added the Y at some point. The Bill of all of the iterations of my name, Bill is my least favorite. I mean, it's just, that's something you get in the mail that you have.
Well, I did have a question about Dynasty, and you did speak, well, it's Dynasty. I mean, wow, Dynasty was the deal. Okay, I do recall watching Dynasty, you know, and I have friends who watch Dynasty, so they are going to be very thrilled that we are speaking to you, as I am. But anyway,
look like you're old enough to have watched.
Oh, well, thank you. My babysitter told me all about, Dynasty. So, but, well, okay, well, actually, and then we're going to ask you about, that cast, but okay, this is Beyond the Mouse. So I have a little bit, and follow me with this, okay?
Yeah,
so a friend of mine, Goofy, we're Beyond the Mouse, and I'm a former Walt Disney World cast member, so I still play by the rules. So Goofy was at a big tennis event in Florida, and I mean, it was a who's who of 80s pop culture. I mean, Robin Leach was there reporting the lifestyles of the rich and famous, but Goofy met and posed for pictures with one of your co-stars, John Forsythe. And Goofy tells me that John Forsythe was such a wonderful gentleman. He reached out his hand. Well, hello, Goofy. How are you today? As I remember Goofy telling me. Yeah. And he was just very open to this, to having a moment with Goofy in a photo op. Yeah. And he was so kind, as Goofy told me. Okay, we've enough about that. But anyway, I also remember, okay, Charlton Heston of the Colbys.
Yes.
The Dynasty spinoff.
Yeah.
Was there as well. And he wasn't interested at all in having his picture taken with Goofy, but John Forsythe was the deal.
John, so, I will not disabuse you of any of your favorable rumors of John Forsythe. He is an absolute gentleman. I treasured every moment I got to spend near him and with him, because he was just a lovely, lovely human being. Lovely.
He was so kind to Goofy. I'm like going, if he can be kind to Goofy, he's kind to be Goofy, kind to pretty much everyone. So Well, I mean, that cast, I mean, what was it like working with all those people? And did you have a table read? And what was the table read? Do you do table reads for an hour long series?
No.
I'm like going, what would Joan Collins be wearing when she comes in on to work and all that? So,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's a very hectic and very time consuming schedule, I'm sure. So
jumping into
that sort of thing, what was that like?
It was a great learning experience, because as you can imagine, you know, it's Dynasty, it's largely shot on stages, it's a well-oiled machine, a bit of a sausage machine, but it's a machine, and it's, you know, it's making prime sausage. And so I learned a lot about, you know, the value of being professional. I was working with a load of professionals, John Forsythe, top among them, but all there, nobody coming to work and holding like the pages in their hands. Everybody comes to work off the page, and I remember John Forsythe telling me one time, and I have never failed since, but he told me, there was so much I wish I could remember, but I do remember a moment when we were talking and he told me a few things to always do, right? Wow. Always do this, always do that. And one of the things was, at the end of the day, you're in your hole, you're in your cubicle. When you take off your costume, hang up your clothing, hang it up, hang it back up. You know, people have to come in and take that stuff, and they hang up your clothing. And I have never from that day ever not hung up my clothing after I've used it.
That's great. Yes.
It's a funny thing to remember, but.
No, it's all important. And working with he and so many other people, I mean, it certainly bodes well.
I met Rock Hudson, for God's sake.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, wow. Yeah, and the cat fights, well, it's, you know, it's an iconic series and you're part of that. So that is, you know, that's a great thing.
Yeah.
And it led to so many other wonderful things. Oh, now we're going there. I'm practicing my segues.
I'd say getting into the Rocketeer, and I have to, in the most respectful way possible, push back a little bit that he's not a superhero, because really Batman's just a guy with a lot of money. So Cliff can do it.
Batman's not a superhero either.
Okay, fair enough. But it is celebrating its 30th year. And Vanessa alluded to this, but this is one of my top five favorite films. It's when you look at The Rocketeer, a lot of articles are coming out about it celebrating its 30th year. And they talk about how it had the Marvel formula before these Marvel MCU films were even a thought. And so what do you think it is about The Rocketeer in general, from your perspective? How does it endure like this over time? And why does it have such the fan base that it does?
I think part of it is the sweet spirit of the film, you know, and maybe that's the largest part of it. It has a really sweet spirit. And honestly, I think that's reflective of its creator, Dave Stevens, who was a sweet, sweet man, a kind and caring and sweet man. And the other part of it is just that beautiful design, you know, that 30s sort of what's it called, Art Nouveau. Mm-hmm.
It's kind of an Art Deco, but Art Nouveau too.
Art Deco, sorry. Yeah. Style, which is so everything about it. I mean, even the shape of the GB. I think part of the reason Dave loved the era so much is that it just was so much fun to draw and so much fun to look at. And then, of course, you have all of the wonderfully accomplished people, first and foremost, Joe Johnston, who worked to craft it. Jim Bissell, one of the best production designers in the business. It was sort of a perfect storm of things to sort of thrill your sense of adventure and thrill your warm the cockles of your heart.
Absolutely. It's just so it's such a great mixture of that old Hollywood feel with this action adventure that was really coming into its prime in the 90s and in the 80s, having come off of things like Indiana Jones and all of that. And it fits that mold so, so, so well. Vanessa, you had a question?
Yeah, so we wanted to just talk a little bit more about this because the role is such a standout performance. So you're in LA, you're doing the Dynasty thing. So tell us, walk us to how you become Cliff Secord.
That's pretty funny because by the time, let's see, Rocketeer came around in 90, and I was doing Dynasty in 84. I think I started on Dynasty 85, maybe something like that. So there were a few years in between. I started going to the Southern California Renaissance Fair as soon as I got to LA, which used to be up in the mountains just north of Los Angeles, and was really like a holdover from the hippie days. It was really something to witness. It was wonderful, and I went there as a customer. Though it's a bit like Rocky Horror Picture Show, everyone dresses up to go to the Renaissance. Mm-hmm. I went there as a customer for the first few years, but then it moved down to San Bernardino, around the edge of this big lake down in San Bernardino. And it became even bigger. I started working there, working there as one of the, the Renaissance Fair is so geeky. It's all, they run it like an old, like a period thing. I mean, you belong to a guild and you learn all these crafts and it's wonderful. I mean, 90% of the joy of the Renaissance Fair is behind the scenes for the people who work there, and so I became part of the Actors Guild, and I started doing a half hour version, if you can conceive of it, a half hour version of The Taming of the Shrew, so imagine a version of The Taming of the Shrew in which all of the dead time, meaning all of the time that you would spend actually catching your breath on stage, were cut out, right? So it's fast, it's furious, and it's half hour long, and we do it three times a day. And not only that, but I would be well into my cups before the first before the first show. So I was doing the Renaissance Fair. I had long hair. I had a massive goatee, and I was doing Shakespeare, and I was just as happy as I could be when I was called to go on this audition for this movie, which I don't know where my head was, but I think I glanced at the script and I was like, it's some comic book thing. And I never really liked superhero movies. I still am not a big fan, but I went on the audition, and all I remember is walking into the room, and I think the people in the room, the casting director, and maybe there was Joe Johnston and some other people, a producer or two, and they were looking at me like, what is this guy doing here? I looked like a, you know, like a, I don't know what I looked like. I looked like a madman. And I didn't hear anything more about it. I went back to the fair, having a wonderful time eating turkey legs and drinking Guinness and, you know, chasing wenches in the street between shows. And sure enough, like a couple months go by, and then I got a call, and my manager says, they want to see you for The Rocketeer again. They want to screen test you. And I'm like, huh? What? And so I went, I dug up the script and I read it, and I'm like, and I properly read it. And I was not doing the Renaissance Fair at this point, though I was still rather hirsute. And I read the script properly, and I'm like, wow, this is cool. And I realized that it was based on a comic strip. So I rolled down the hill to Golden Apple Comics, and I went and got the graphic novel. And I'm in the store, and I probably like said something loud and obscene the moment I opened the magazine, because I'm like, wait a minute, this is me. And of course, Dave, you know, drew The Rocketeer modeled on him, and he and I might have been brothers. We look so much alike. And I was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. I ran right to a barber and I got my face shaved and I got my hair cut to a 1930s style haircut. And I went back to the studio the next day or whenever it was. And the one thing I remember is that I walked into the soundstage and they were doing screen tests. And apparently they were doing a day of screen tests. They'd seen everybody in town. I mean, like crazy people, like Don Johnson and people that were too old for it and people that were too young for it and other people. And they still couldn't quite find the guy. And Joe Johnston, they had some screen tests scheduled. And apparently, you know, they have to pay the crew for like the whole day, but even though they've only got one or two screen tests arranged, so they needed like two or three more screen tests. So he put his finger on the list and he's like, what about this guy, Billy Campbell? We haven't seen him in 2 months. And so there I go. I show up for the screen test. I walk into the door of the soundstage and Joe just happens to be a couple of meters away at the craft service table making a sandwich. He looks up and then looks down and looks up again at me, like does a double take. Because I'd got the haircut, I'd got my face shaved, and right then my heart leapt and I thought, I have a real shot at this. And then they offered it to Johnny Depp.
Okay. Don't dong.
Well,
that didn't happen though. So no, I feel better now. For a moment there, I'm like going, oh, that's right, it has a happy ending. Okay.
Well, so. I'll tell you, in case you want to know how it happened that Johnny didn't do it, my agent's office was right next to Johnny's agent's office at ICM. And my agent called me up and said, Billy, Tracy's going to have a conversation with Johnny today about whether he should do The Rocketeer or not. And she invited me. I'm going in there. And I was like, okay. And he called me later in the day and said, I was brilliant. I did everything. I started by telling him all the reasons he should do the movie. And then I segued into all the reasons he shouldn't, how he wants to have an offbeat career. And this is not really an offbeat film. And it's a big commercial thing and blah, blah, blah. And so we talked him out of it.
The best agent in town.
Oh my gosh. That's a good story. Thank
and
you.
And a few days later, sorry, I'm babbling.
No, that's okay. Ahead.
A few days later, I was at the agency and in my agent's office, and he says, Billy, he said, Johnny's right next door with Tracy. You want to go in there? I'm like, no. And he said, yes, you're coming in there. And he took me in there, and there was Johnny Depp. It's the one and only time I've ever met him. And I didn't know what to do. I picked him up and gave him a great big bear hug and said, thanks. It's funny. He's like a tiny human being. He's like tiny, but he smelled good. He smelled like, I don't know, leather and citronella or something.
That sounds about right, I think.
Wow. Great.
Can I also just say that you are my favorite guest we've ever had on now, because you mentioned that you like turkey legs, and we have a running gag that I'm the only one on this show that likes turkey legs, and you are the very first one to ever bring it up. So that will, I will forever treasure this.
I don't even, I fail to comprehend how that's even a gag, because doesn't everyone like turkey legs?
You would think everyone does.
I wouldn't say that you're the only one on the show. I think just Brett is so aggressively against the existence of a turkey leg that
it's a very sort of specific park related event, you know, at a Renaissance fair. Okay, you know, I'm going to give you Renaissance fair, because, you know, okay. I will give you Renaissance fair, but I'm like going walking around in Frontierland or going into Tomorrowland and I see a turkey leg. Remember, we are beyond the mouse. So anyway, it just is. I'll just shut up, though, and let her have her turkey leg moment, you know?
Yes. Ye old turkey leg is delicious.
I still have my Renaissance fair gear hanging up on the fence.
I love a good Renaissance fair. That's perfect.
So great. You mentioned, you know, I think people, if they didn't know that Dave Stevens had come up with this amazing graphic novel and that was the basis for the movie, people would pick that up today and they absolutely would think that the graphic novel was done after the movie, because it is striking, the resemblance between you and Cliff Secord. And I just, you know, you mentioned that Dave is such a genius and working with the film. I'm wondering, can you elaborate on that? Was he on set for most of the film? Did he work in the development of the film? How did all that go? How was that relationship?
I don't know exactly about the development. My hunch is that he was pretty closely involved. He was shy as well. And a remarkably sort of a humble fellow, but I think he felt shy about being around too much. I wanted him around all the time. I mean, my God, I'm like a kid who wanted to draw comic books, you know? So like hanging out with Dave Stevens was, you know, I don't know, the whole thing was a bit of a wet dream, you know, like hanging out with Dave Stevens and doing an old, my very first film, being the lead in my very first film. Not only that, but it's an adventure movie. Not only that, but it's set in the 30s. Not only that, but I'm falling in love with my co-star. I mean, like the whole thing was just, it was just, yeah. So anyway, Dave was around. He wasn't around as often as I would have liked, but he was definitely a presence.
That's excellent. Vanessa, you had a question about Joe Johnston.
Oh, we've talked about him in just a little bit, and he has a real eye for that World War II nostalgia, and most notably in The Rocketeer and also Captain America, the first Avenger. So we just kind of wanted to ask you, how do you feel he's able to capture that time so well? And did Joe get you as an actor into the period of the film in any particular way?
No, I think Joe's magic is, you know, I told him this recently. We not that long ago, just a couple of months ago, we had a Zoom viewing of The Rocketeer, and Joe was there, and Amy Young, and the whole she was special effects, and the whole bunch of the special effects folks from Industrial Light and Magic. We're on the Zoom and we all watched the movie together and yacked about it. Amy Young, by the way, a Renaissance Fair, who I knew at the Renaissance Fair before she even was at ILM. and so Joe, I said this to Joe afterward, we traded a couple of emails, and I said, he was a funny cup of tea to begin with, because I was a beginning actor. I mean, you know, my first film job, I'd been acting for a while, but Joe is, if things are going well, Joe leaves you alone. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
And he has a very
spare directing style, which I have come to love. And it's, and honestly, you know, he was a funny cup of tea for me in the beginning. I grew to love him and love his direction. And I told him recently that you are the cup of tea against which I have measured countless other cups of tea over the years, and oh. and you know, and none, very few, if any, have equaled. So I think his magic is he knows how to move the camera. He knows that the camera is the audience, and that the that he should take the audience. He knows how to take the audience where they need to go. And he works with good people, and he's trusting of good people, you know, and he doesn't brook nonsense from jerks. So, you know, he's everything a top-notch director ought to be. And yeah.
That's great.
Did I answer that? I can't even remember what the question was.
You did.
Yes, you answered it wonderfully.
Brett, you had a question about his co-stars, numerous co-stars in the in the movie.
Well, it was so great to watch The Rocketeer again, because I've watched it a few times, and Craig has, you know, helped me revisit it. So, you know, so I'm very grateful to him for that. But there is so much chemistry in this film with your castmates. And I'm a big fan of Margot Martindale, you know. I wanted to ask if there was any specific stories or thoughts that you had with working with three individuals specifically, and we can take them one at a time if you like, because it sounds like you probably have some stories. But anyway, I'm going to reverse the order just a little bit here. But Timothy Dalton?
Timothy. Gentlemen, obviously I haven't seen every Timothy Dalton performance across the board, but I have to believe it's one of his very best. He's magnificent as the Neville Sinclair, of course. Neville. I just think he was genius. He was absolutely genius in the role. Genius, and a gentleman. And I adored him. I wish we had more time, spent more time together.
That's great. Wow. Okay. And Jennifer Connelly.
Jennifer Connelly, there's not a lot needs saying.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, and then I adored her as well. We fell in love during the movie. We were together for 5 years or so afterward, and I adore her to this day.
That's awesome. And Alan Arkin. Wow.
Alan
Arkin.
Alan and I are still friends, and we do still keep in touch. I was with my wife and kids in Nova Scotia, not last summer, but the summer before, I guess. The summer the hurricane came across, what's the name of the hurricane? I think it was Hugo, maybe, or something?
Yes.
Anyway, that summer, Alan has a house up in New Brunswick. Cape Breton. And so we packed up the car and we drove up to Cape Breton to see Alan. So I have seen him as lately as then, but we chat to send messages back and forth still. I love him. Love him to death. He's one of the sweetest people in God's green earth. And
he's great in the film too. So that too, so good. And in everything. So,
Our relationship is very much like Phoebe and Cliff's relationship.
That is awesome. That is wonderful.
Just fantastic to hear. You know, so I, in doing research, I went back and listened to a couple of your recent interviews. And in one interview in particular, you mentioned that you had written your own backstory to Cliff Secord. And you said you might still have that. And I have to ask if you found it.
I haven't found it yet, but okay. I know it's, I've got boxes and boxes because I sold my house in LA finally after, you know, however many years in 2019. And I rescued everything of any, you know, importance to me, which were mostly books and old notebooks and papers and stuff. I know it's up there somewhere in all those, in that, all the cabinetry. And one of these days I'm going to end up finding it. So if and when I do, I will share it. I promised to share it with, what interview was that? I can't remember.
Who that was Comic Book Central, I believe. Yeah. Comic Book Central.
I have to write
it. Was
that.
Beyond the Mouse, wasn't it? Sorry, just kidding.
I'll share it with you guys too.
Perfect.
I'll share it with everyone, but I can't remember. I couldn't remember who it was.
Now you know.
Now yeah. I see. Know. Thank you for reminding
me. That was good. Yeah. So Craig, you know, pay it forward there.
That's
so.
Right. That's right. Well, you yeah. know, is that something that you do with characters? Like, so is it something that you did with, say, John Cardinal when you got that? Obviously, there's more literature on him than one graphic novel series. You had the novels to go to. But is that something that you find yourself doing, kind of getting into the character that way? Or was that just sort of a special occurrence?
That was mainly a one-off. And that was also mainly because I was young and just starting out and nervous and felt the need to make myself overly familiar with something, anything, in order to, you know, allay, partially allay my nerves. I don't do that much anymore, though. I sometimes, you know, like I'm here doing a pilot now, and I just had a talk the other night with the producer, and, you know, I don't need to write a full biography of the guy, but I do need to know some, you know, salient kind of things. And now it's just a matter of, you know, I asked the producer who wrote and created the character, like, what are you looking for? What kind of guy are you looking for? You know, is he, I don't know. Is he happy? Is he sad? What is he? You know, you tell me what he is and then I'll make something up. But back then I was super excited. I was, and I do like to write. And so I wrote this backstory for Cliff, how Cliff and Peavy met and all that. And I think it's actually pretty damn good. I had a dream of, I never showed it to Dave. I never got to show it to him. But at one point I had a dream that I would show it to Dave and that he would like it so much that he would draw it.
That would have been just great. You know, I don't know if you need any kind of encouragement on this, but if in case you do, if you enjoy writing and just this rich story you've already provided with us, if you ever feel like you should sit down and write a memoir, the answer is yes, because we would love to read it. We would love to get that for sure. But Vanessa, you had our next question.
So the great late James Horner wrote a score that was both beautiful and perfect for the film. And we just wanted to ask you, were you able to hear any of it before the film was released? And how did you feel it shaped the film?
Well, I don't remember hearing it before it was released. Though I guess I must have at some point. No, but that doesn't come back to me. But how it shaped the film, oh my God. Can you imagine that movie without that score? I mean, the movie would still be good, yeah. But that score is just brilliant. It just lifts you. I mean, like the wings, like you're on wings, you know, which is exactly what, you know, which is may have been what James was thinking of when he wrote it. It's just a magical, magical score. Magical score. It's right up there for me with, you know, The Mission, I think, is one of my favorite old.
Yeah.
That's a good one, yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
That opening title sequence and that opening scene, it sets you in such a way, it delivers you into the story in such a way that's so amazing and sets the scene so well.
And a couple of the music cues, some of the music cues that weren't necessarily James, but the one that just pops into my mind is after they shoot up the house and we run out the back door, Peavy and I, and then the big band music kicks in. I can't remember which song it is, but just fantastic. Or in the South Seas Club when Begin the Begin kicks in, it's just I have to watch the movie now again.
Yay! Well, hey,
I will watch it along with you. Anyway, but Brett, you have a question now about the end of the film and kind of where it went from there.
Well, when we reach the end of the film and Jenny hands to Peavy the plans for the rocket, as fans of this film, it left us wanting so much more. Now, we understand that there may have been stories where Disney wanted to create a franchise or sequels. Were there any whispers at the time on the set about a Rocketeer sequel? Or
there were whispers. There were whispers. But they, you know, when the movie opened, it didn't do the business that Disney wanted. Then the whispers just
goes away.
Yeah.
Well, still, you know, there's whispers, and we still love it. So
there's just a couple of films that it seemed like they were ahead of their times for, whether it be the critics or the audience reaction. I actually, growing up in this era, I really put this film in a category along with something like Hook, which is thought of as Steven Spielberg's kind of miss of a film, but it has such a life because that is Robin Williams is my Peter Pan. And again, you know, we alluded to this earlier, you were the first person for me that I experienced. I promised these guys I wouldn't fanboy too much, but I dressed up, I made a helmet and I ran around my house as the Rocketeer, you know? Yeah. And so that endures. And I wanted to ask about that because I have a son now, I have a 5-year-old, and I try my best not to impress all my love of properties, movies, anything on him. I want him to come to it on his own.
Yeah.
But there's a beautiful series now it's on Disney Plus. You can find it there. It is a new Rocketeer, and we get to follow Kit Secord and her adventures. And so I didn't want to immediately be like, okay, he has to watch this, but he came to it on his own. He saw it as an option on the homepage, and he loves it. He watches the whole series. He watches all the episodes, and you're part of that as well. And so I wanted to ask what the process was like, or what the feeling is like to deliver this to a new generation.
Well, it's lovely. It's lovely. And it's, the notion of it, you know, I get pleasure from, but overall the job is kind of lonely. Like, I've never met any of those people. The only thing I've ever done is get on a train, go up to Oslo, go into a sound studio, do some voice work with people that I don't even see on a TV, just people, engineers in LA. And then I get on a train and go home to the farm. And I've never met any of them. I've never any of it. So it's like, it's super fun idea. And I'm super happy to sort of have that out there. But I have to say, it's been kind of a lonely experience. My whole thing for working is like, and it really always has been, I've always just enjoyed working because you meet people, you go new places and you meet new people. And I didn't meet anybody except a lonely sort of sound engineer up in Oslo.
But you have lunch on occasion now because you're best friends. So no, maybe not. Okay. No. Well, anyway, that's okay. You'll see each other at the store and go, "Oh, remember," you know.
You know, there when you're trying to do some of these interviews, you try to be as professional as possible and things. And I was joking with them that this one would be hard. And I don't want to come off as like a crazy fan for you, because then you're kind of like, well, that guy's weird. So I'm trying to play this cool as much as possible.
You're golden. It's all good. I have experienced all kinds of things over the years. So I'm don't even sweat it.
I appreciate that.
I'll tell you a funny thing that happened. Maybe one of the best things that's happened with regard to the Rocketeer and fanship. I was down in San Diego doing a play at the Old Globe, and I was out one evening with some rugby teammates of mine. I used to play rugby for Santa Monica, and we go down and play San Diego, Old Mission Bay in San Diego all the time. And as happens, you become friends with people who have previously tried to beat the shit out of you on the rugby field. And I was out with a group of them one night in a pub, and there was a really, and these were older guys like me, peers of mine. And there was a table nearby of younger guys, really like buff looking younger guys, and they were super rowdy. And, you know, I'm a pacifist anyway, but my days of even accidentally getting in a fight are long gone. And none of my rugby buddies who are, you know, as old as me, or if not 5-10 years older, nobody wants to get in a fight. So it, as it happens, you just kind of keep them on your radar. You know what I mean? Just to, you know, if I have to get up and like actually run away or leave the pub or something, or, you know, whatever, you never know what's going to happen. Anyway, they nothing happened, and they kind of went off my radar, and I'm sitting there with my guys, and then this hand comes on my shoulder, and it's like I look up, and it's one of those guys, and he's looking down at me, and I have no idea what the look in his face is. You know, there's no expression on his face. And so that means he could be like, he could have got drunk enough that he said to his friends, watch this, watch what I do to this jerk over here. And I look up, and he says in the sweetest voice imaginable, excuse me, but are you the Rocketeer? And I'm like, and immediately, like, it was almost like I needed to pee. I was so relieved. And I said, why, yes, I am. He said, well, I just want you to know that I'm a Navy SEAL, and these are my teammates over here. We're all Navy SEALs. And I just wanted to say, you're the reason I'm a Navy SEAL. And I was what? And he said, yeah, my dad, you know, took me to see the Rocketeer when I was 10 for my birthday or something. And that was the first time I ever remembered having a heroic thought in my life. And I wanted to be a hero. And that led directly to my joining the Navy. And joining the Navy led directly to my joining the SEALs. And so that happened. And I became friends with them. I'm still in touch with a couple of those SEAL guys. They came to see the play. And I went to that guy's birthday celebration at a different pub like 8 weeks later. And I gave him the only memento I ever kept from the Rocketeer, which was a menu from the Bulldog Cafe.
Wow.
I regret it now. I wish I hadn't. Oh, wow. Yeah, it had an old call sheet from the movie also stuffed in the back of the movie.
So that's really cool. That's, and I mean, truly, you had that impact on so many people, and you know, myself included. But I think it's Vanessa that has the next question. I was losing your story. I lost my place. But Vanessa, I think you have the next question.
I don't even know how I can ask anything that would top that story, I'll try here. So you broke some news in a recent interview that you'll be returning to your Star Trek The Next Generation character, the new Nickelodeon show Star Trek Prodigy. And I'm wondering if you're able to share any additional details about this show. Has production begun? Have you recorded your part?
You could say, you know, we could say something like, you know, I will hint at you that I may be revisiting the Star Trek universe at some point in the near future.
Okay, well, thank you then.
Wow. For sharing that tip. That's not a scoop. That's just common knowledge. Thank you, though.
Well, Brett, you had a question.
Well, you mentioned your rugby experiences, and we've read that you love rugby and sailing, and that you've even been part of a crew of a multi-masted tall ship, and you've sailed around the world. Mm-hmm. Wow. I mean, it seems as though you have a wonderful sense of adventure. Does that speak to your philosophy about life? Ooh, big questions now.
Well, I don't know. I mean,
or what you did on your summer vacation or your hiatus, that sort of thing.
Well, no. You know, the rugby thing is, I mean, rugby, I think, is kind of saved my life when I was younger and running around and being rather dissolute and so it gave me something to, you know, it gave me something. Rugby is there's a spirit to the game that is, and between the people that play the game. That's why you could go down to San Diego and have beers in a pub with people who you spent, 8-10 years of your life trying to beat the hell out of. So that's that. As far as sailing is concerned, I came to Los Angeles. The dangerous thing about the business for me was that being in Los Angeles, you know, there are no real seasons, right? I'm an East Coast boy. There are no real seasons. I mean, you have the May gray, the June gloom, but that's like it. You might have, well, we used to have some rain in September, but that's like hardly happening anymore. And so you don't notice the seasons going by, right? And then as an actor, you're afraid to leave town that often because what am I gonna miss? So, make long story short, you know, I had a midlife crisis, and one day I'm like in my house in Los Angeles, and I'm sitting on my bed looking out over, you know, Santa Monica, and I suddenly realize, wait a minute, I'm 40. You know, I moved there when I was like 23 and suddenly I was 40. I mean, that's what it felt like what just happened. And I was at the time reading the Patrick O'Brien series, Master and Commander series of books. There were 20 of them. I was halfway through. My friend, Stephen Lang, the actor who is the, you know, the bad guy in Avatar, we've been friends ever since we did Crime Story together in Chicago in the mid 80s.
He's so amazing in Gettysburg too.
Isn't he though? Yeah. And so he had introduced me to these novels. I was halfway through them, and I suddenly and I had this midlife crisis sitting on the edge of my bed in Los Angeles. I remember exactly where I was, sitting on the edge of my bed, looking out over LA, and I think I started crying. Mm-hmm. I was like, what the F am I doing? I'm 40. I got here, you know, 17 years ago, and I haven't done anything. I've done some acting, but that never really felt like much. And anyway, one thing led to another, and I just had this notion that I had to go sail on a tall ship, really partly to get the hell out of town, but also partly because when I read the rest of the novels, I wanted to know exactly what it felt like when he described a ship rolling on the sea. Mm.
And I had remembered seeing an advert in the back of a Harper's magazine for a tall ship, a Norwegian tall ship. It had a little silhouette of a tall ship and it said, come live the adventure on the tall ship Sørlandet in Norway. I ran down that moment, got in the Jeep and I ran down to Santa Monica to a newsstand and I got, this was before I had internet, I think. And I got a magazine and I found the advert and I booked passage on that tall ship. And so I went off to a tall ship in Norway. And then I loved it so much. It was the most exciting thing I'd ever done. I loved it so much that I stayed on that ship for 4 years, four sailing seasons, not, you know, four straight years. And when I came back to town, it made it, one of the major differences it made for me was that when I walked into an audition, I had a faraway look in my eyes. I no longer had this look like I'm desperate for this job, please hire me. I was like, I had a look like I wanted to be somewhere else. And they would start asking me like, you know, what do you do when you're not acting? And I started telling them and they were like, that's amazing. And you look like you love it so much. And I do. And I'm like, I do. So yeah, hope I get the job. But if I don't, good luck. See you later.
Wow.
And so I was on that ship for four seasons. And the last season I was aboard, my shipmate Ida brought her cousin, Anna, on board as a trainee. Not a crew member, but a trainee, and Anna is now my wife, and we have two kids.
Oh, wow! That's just incredible. It's so cool to hear your life story and all the different directions that you've taken, and it seems like you're one of those people that have really lived life and kind of sucked the marrow out of life, which is extremely extremely great to be able to talk to you about that. I need to ask now sort of what you have up on the horizon. I don't know if you're allowed to say, you did mention earlier that you're in Vancouver for a pilot. Are you able to say what that pilot is or give us any details?
I am indeed. It's called National Parks. It's for ABC. It's produced by Kevin Costner and his company. And it's set in the National Park Service. There are, the National Park Service they have rangers and they have ISB agents. Rangers, they have quite a few of, maybe a couple thousand, I think, spread out. There are the people in the flat hats, you see, who, you know, the Smokey Bear hats. And then they have ISB agents who are, it stands for Investigative Services Bureau of the National Park Service. So they're like the, I don't know, for about lack of a better term, they're the investigative officers of the National Park Service. So if there's some crime in the national parks and initially a ranger is involved or then the ISB come and you know, rangers often become ISB agents and so forth, but they're the investigative services branch of the National Park Service. And so the show is set in the ISB in the national parks. I believe it's set in Yosemite. And it's really well written. The dialogue, I think, is brilliant. It's the kind of dialogue that I wasn't going to come back to North America, but to be honest, they made me an offer I couldn't refuse. Mm-hmm. And we really need the money at this point because we're doing a major renovation on the farm in Norway and as well as building a cabin up in the mountains. Long story short, this writing really is smart. It's good. It's not typical TV writing. And I'm hoping that it does good things for the, you know, it shines a light on the ISB. We spent some time last night on a Zoom with the guy who used to be in charge of the whole agency. Mind you, though there are 2,000 or 3,000 rangers in the national parks, ISB agents number about 30. And that's covering 84 million square acres of national park service. Oh. And we talked to him last night, and he said, you know, I got to tell you, the agents at the ISB, they're all pretty damned excited about this show. Because not a lot of people know that they exist. And there is, from what I'm learning, there's a lot of nasty stuff goes on in the national parks. I've been on the National Park Service website and reading their yearly reports. And I mean, there's a lot of nasty stuff that goes on. So
at least 12 seasons of that, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh my God, please no.
Okay. Okay. Picked well, then, up and yeah, good until, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Well, if you think about like what has happened with Kevin Costner's Yellowstone, it makes a lot of sense that this might be an area where he might expand. And that's extremely exciting because truly to kind of come back full circle to where we begun this, I, again, can't recommend people check out Cardinal enough because your acting in that is just superb. And I typically don't do kind of the gory criminal dramas, but it's something about the writing of that show. Like you said, it was something about the writing of that show that was different and that gave us those multi-layer characters. And the fact that it was in 6-episode series that were pretty much self-contained, it just made it's making it such a great viewing experience. So I can't recommend that enough. And we can't wait to see what else you're going to be in the future. And this has just been so great. This has been such a wonderful time to get to talk to you. And I just want to say thank you so much for the opportunity to be able to speak with you today.
Well, it's my pleasure, you guys, especially seeing as how I'm in quarantine and desperate for company.
Hey, well, we can do this, you know, anytime you feel, you know, just give us a little Zoom ring up and we will be happy to hear more of your stories. Definitely.
I'd be fine with that. Fine with that.
Well, and you've put aside the notion never meet your heroes because, you know, I think because Craig is going to be fanboying and loving this for a moment. So thank you so much.
I really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you.
All right.
Well, take care, please. Yep. We can't wait to see you on the screen and wherever else you are next.
Thank you. Bye now.
Bye. See you.
I have a hard time kind of putting it into words how great of an experience that was because Billy was so open with us. He was willing to tell us some stories about his career in acting. He talks about life in a way that, again, I joked with him that he should write a memoir, but he has, it seems like a very good outlook on life and his career in Hollywood, but also the important things like living on a farm and being able to go back to those roots and then return to that life again after having lived in Los Angeles. It just incredible interview. I can't thank him enough for his time and for everything that he has done to propel, again, my thought of that superhero genre, that comic book genre. Again, I know he says that Cliff Secord's not a superhero, but in my eye, he still is. Vanessa, your thoughts on the interview we just had?
Well, I am just so happy for you. Are you alive even? Are you dead? Do I need to get out the defibrillator? Clear. You know, I was ready the whole time to resuscitate you if you needed it.
I thought I handled myself fairly well, right?
You did. You are much better than me and Brett because we just go on and on about how we're not stalkers when we talk to people.
The whole Phil Collins thing could get a little issue.
but a cool, calm cucumber and nothing but class. So I'm so happy for you. And he was, I think he could be the world's nicest guy, possibly. You know, he's had a wonderful career. I really get the sense that he loves his craft and has really worked on it throughout his career. But I also love just talking about life with him and his wanting to sail and what a delight and just a very, very nice person. It was a wonderful time to speak with him. And again, So happy for you and so happy that he enjoys ye olde turkey leg. Oh, Brett, I bet you didn't think that was going to come up today, did you, buddy? We will forever have this in our memories.
Yes, yes. Oh, well, are you going to me now? Because I was going
to
mention
the turkey leg. I think I have to. And I thought maybe Vanessa might bring that back up.
Well, she just did. And I forgive, you know, I'm a very forgiving person. And, you know, I was in the interview, I was kind of specific on where I think turkey legs should exist. Renaissance fairs, yes, theme parks. Well, not when I'm around. But anyway, yeah, back to this interview. You know, this was, as I said, don't meet your, you know, you should never meet your heroes. And kind of, Craig, you did. And I think it was a good experience. So I am happy for that. I am happy that he shared so many wonderful experiences, both on set and on screen experiences, as well as life lessons that he's learned, because we always love life lessons on our podcast. So we can, yeah, learn and grow.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's wonderful about it is that he is continuing to act. We get to experience that again. I've mentioned it a bunch in the interview at the top and at the bottom. Cardinal is great. Please go out there and support that on Hulu. I'm really looking forward to that pilot that he's filming for ABC. I can't wait to see what becomes of that. And of course, it's very neat that he acknowledges the role that The Rocketeer has in a lot of fans' lives, because sometimes you do that first major movie and you move past that role, or you know, you may not want to address it or talk about it too much. But he was so open with talking about his love for Dave Stevens and his interactions with Joe Johnston, and of course all of his amazing ensemble around him. It's just everything. It was everything. So I'm so grateful to Billy. Thank you so much for the opportunity. And we've had so many great opportunities, right? And we are so grateful to all the people that we've gotten to speak with. And again, this one is just a bit, it has a bit more of a place for me because of the importance of this particular film on my childhood, for sure. So any final thoughts, you two? Brett?
We're so happy for you. We're so happy for you.
I'm happy for you too, because, you know, I will say that when I said, I don't know, how long have we been doing this? Like 4 years ago, or 3 years ago? You had told me that I really needed to go check out Big Business, I believe was the film. And it took me forever to do that. And also Pollyanna, you told me that, took me forever to come to those films. And then I was like, if I'm going to assign you a movie, it's The Rocketeer, right? And so it's kind of nice to come full circle with that.
Yeah,
Vanessa, any final thoughts?
Well, again, yes, we're very happy for you. Now we have to move on and talk about this national park site. Okay, let's get on there right now, because I want to know what the deets are. What is the drama he is talking about? Is Smokey Bear starting his own forest fires? Could it be? I don't know. I got to find out. We got to go do this right away. So let's wrap this show up so I can go dig through the national parks website. I'm going to be on there for a few hours, I think.
Absolutely. I'm going to go watch Rocketeer again. Yeah.
You know where you can spend a couple of hours? You can subscribe to our podcast on any podcast feed that you'd like. You can find us by searching Beyond the Mouse. You can also follow us on social media, Beyond the Mouse Podcast on Facebook, also Beyond the Mouse Pod on Instagram, and Beyond Mouse on Twitter. We're kind of trying to be active all over the place so you can interact with us. Please feel free to message us and let us know what you think of the show. We really love to hear from people and would love to get your insights into what you'd like us to try to cover in the future, because we are certainly here to make this an interactive experience for you as well. We are also a Community Voices podcast of NPR Illinois, so you can find us on nprillinois.org. And we are part of the Front Row Network, so you can find us there by searching the Front Row Network on any social media, and also Front Row Reviews with a Z on Twitter as well. Counting, this is episode 98. And we will have an episode next week, episode 99. If I've done my math correctly and we've done the schedule correctly in my mind, we are going to be meeting another Vanessa Ferguson, who also has a Disney podcast, which will be really fun. It was a great conversation that we were able to have. And then it's the big deal. April 2nd is our 100th episode. And Brett, feel free to edit this out if you don't want us to make this announcement on the podcast.
But I will say, by the time this drops, we would have had a recording that I think is going to be extremely special for you to be able to listen to. And I think because you're our listeners, you've already subscribed to us, you deserve to know first. We will post it on our social media, of course, but we are having a panel discussion, all things about A Goofy Movie, with director Kevin Lima, Bill Farmer, the voice of Goofy himself, and Jason Marsden, who plays Max in the film. And it is going to be so great. I'm so excited. It's funny because I was so busy preparing for this interview today that I'm almost in my mind have had to kind of bundle up my excitement for next week and that interview and that panel next week, just to make sure that I didn't lose myself in these amazing experiences. And of course, Kevin Lima is quite the friend of the podcast, and he has kind of helped us orchestrate this for our 100th episode. Mm-hmm. And we can't wait. We literally can't wait for you to listen to it and can't wait to experience it. So any closing thoughts? I'll go to Brett first.
This was wonderful. So we thank Billy for the opportunity to speak with him. And I thank my two co-hosts for just being you.
We're going to have a lot of time. We're going to have a lot of time to get weepy and emotional on the 100th episode, but none of this would have happened without the two of you joining on episode 13, whatever the case may be, because, you know, we work so well together as a unit, and this would not have happened without both of you in that as well. And so I'm so grateful for that. But again, we've got time to be weepy on the 100th episode. But Vanessa, any final thoughts before we get out of here?
Well, I have to say you guys are the best. And thank you to our listeners too. You are such a part of this as well. So thank you for listening. And that 100th episode will be so good. It'll have you saying, gosh.
Gosh. Yeah. We'll have to do, we probably shouldn't do any Goofy impressions with Bill Farmer. That would probably, if I start to go down that path, we will stop you immediately.
I'm like, nah.
It's time to get out of here because you need to go to Disney Plus and turn on The Rocketeer right now. So for Beyond the Mouse podcast, I am Craig.
I'm Vanessa.
And I'm Brett.
And we will see you real soon in the front row. Oh, just incredible.
Are you okay?
I'm great.
It was awesome. So
it was awesome.
Wonderful.
It was awesome.
Thank you again.
Good job.
Very cool, guys.